This is the Studio Zero podcast for the week of September 15th, 2005. All of the regular hosts, producers, and technicians are locked out of the CBC building, so please enjoy the number one podcast in the country. Here's some quality stuff from Studio Zero, from Vancouver. Bling bling.
The radio revolution is underway.
Welcome to CBC Unplugged, broadcasting once again from Studio Zero in Vancouver. I'm Erica Johnson.
And I'm Rick Clough. And this week's edition of CBC Unplugged marks the one-month anniversary of the lockout.
Okay, that may not be too much to celebrate, but we do have a few good reasons to smile here at Studio Zero.
And we now have an FM transmitter online, thanks to Doug Lane and our excellent and innovative technical crew. And you can hear us in downtown Vancouver at 88.3 on your FM band.
CBC Unplugged is the number one podcast in the country.
Jack Webster nominations were recently announced, and many of our pals here on the lines are now up for BC's Most Distinguished Journalism Awards. Congratulations to them and to all our colleagues at other stations and newspapers across the province.
Now, let's get going with today's future award-winning broadcast. Our pirate program, CBC Unplugged, is proudly put together by locked-out CBC Vancouver technicians, reporters, producers, and associate producers.
And we want to say thank you to all the campus and community radio stations who've been kind enough to share their airwaves with us, to the thousands of listeners who downloaded our podcast online at cbcunplugged.com. That's cbcunplugged.com. We really appreciate your support and look forward to getting back to the business of public broadcasting.
Now here's just a few of the stories we're going to deliver to you in the next hour.
In the past month, CBC has been unable to deliver on some very big stories, not the least of which, of course, has been Hurricane Katrina. CBC television news reporter Natalie Clancy weighs in with her thoughts on that.
We'll get an independent perspective of the lockout from SFU labor guru Mark Lear.
And find out from that closet hockey fan, Ian Hanamansing, what he's been doing while Canada Now has been off the air.
And we're going to tell you about an upcoming fundraiser we're cooking up for the Performing Arts Lodge here in Vancouver.
All that plus more live on the line serenades from local musicians, including Alpha Yaya Diallo, Bocephus King, and another king, the king of the ukulele, Ralph Shaw.
First up, outreach. Now more than ever, it's important for us to stay connected to our audience. BC Almanac's Mark Forsyth was out at the Nat Bailey Farmers Market, and here's what he heard from our listeners.
Summertime, and the living is easy.
My name is Deborah Kahn, and I miss all day radio. I listen to it all day long. It's good radio, it's balanced reporting, it's interesting, it talks about community issues. Just get the people back working and get the radio, get it back on the air.
Your dad is rich, and your ma is good looking.
Hello, my name is Graham, and we watch CBC television and the radio at home at my house, and you're listening to CBC Unplugged.
Don't you right.
Oh, this is Howie Hebert at the Vancouver Farmers Market right outside the Nat Bailey Stadium. And it's a wonderful day here, and we're doing this for CBC Unplugged.
My name is Veronica, and I listen to CBC every morning when I wake up. It's set with my alarm clock, and I miss Rick Clough and waking up to his show, and I miss the other shows that I listen to when I'm driving around in the car during the day.
You're originally from Czechoslovakia, is that right? How important was CBC in becoming a Canadian citizen, understanding what Canada was like?
Well, when I first came here, I worked as a live-in nanny, and I would always have the radio on when I was doing the dishes or some other household chores that I wasn't so fond of. So it played a big part.
I'm Dale Bishop. I live in Vancouver, and I miss After Hours. It's very good cultural input for people who enjoy jazz. I want it back.
I'm Gord White. I'm missing As It Happens and the 6 o'clock news, national world news, CBC Overnight. Also, I listen to CBC 2 in French, and I miss the jazz show during the day.
What do you think of the issues that this has come down to? CBC proceeding with an even more temporary workforce than we already have.
I think it's terrible, and I think the CBC management has made a series of blunders in the last several months. I mean, we all know them. They lost the Olympic bid, and now this. It's almost like the management is trying to get rid of CBC, all part of a, south of the border type mentality. It's appalling.
Ici Robert Groux pour la première chaîne de radio, première chaîne débranchée, chaîne de trottoir, au marché des fermiers, au Stadium Nat Bailey. Puis c'est un endroit pour écouter la radio débranchée de la première chaîne.
Hi, my name is Jennifer. I live in East Van. I'm 29 years old, and I like listening to CBC because it's really the only place you can get critical, diverse, non-American crap that's on the other airwaves. There's nothing else that's out there, and I'm missing it painfully. I wake up and I can't listen to the radio because it ticks me off so much. It's disturbed my morning routine. I'm really out of sorts.
Hi, I'm Dan Getz from CBC Television. I miss my job in the CBC newsroom, but instead I'm here at the Nat Bailey Farmers Market. You're listening to CBC Unplugged.
My name's Ailsa Zenker, and I miss it terribly. The frustrating thing is you hear a piece of music and think, oh, no, I've heard this 10 times in the last 2 weeks. Well, I turn it off right away. I do not wish to hear Bolero ever again or the Holberg Suite or any of that stuff. And then you get a good piece of piano music. They've played a fair number of Beethoven sonatas. Gee, I'd like to know who the artist is. Well, I can't go to the website and check out the programming, and therefore I've learned nothing. I've only got frustrated, and I think, oh, that was interesting. Who was that? Who was that artist? I mean, I don't sit there listening to the radio all the time, but it's on. It's part of me.
Let me walk in the sun once more. Can't go on.
He was conceived with the CBC. That was Bill Murchison in Moonlight. Oh, just we miss you so much. The people in charge are idiots, and I shouldn't say that, but look at what they're replacing you with. Yourselves, all on reruns. It's like using you as your own scabs.
I think that the management doesn't really understand the culture of the CBC and what's appreciated. If they did know, then we would hear two sides of the argument in the morning on the morning show, which we haven't heard yet. We haven't heard a phone call from the management and then a phone call from the strikers, which we'd hear on any other labor issue.
Keeps raining all the time. Keeps raining all the time.
Smooth. Hey. Well done, guys.
Thanks for that, Mark. And if you want to take back your public broadcaster and help end the CBC lockout, check out cbcunplugged.com online. Lots of good ideas and contacts.
Now, like most of you, I'm sure, I watched the impact of Hurricane Katrina and have followed its dreadful aftermath very closely. And it's a story that CBC could have and should have delivered in-depth and with extensive coverage. That is, if we weren't locked out. CBC Television News reporter Natalie Clancy has been thinking about the impact of missing the big stories.
I went to a big labor rally a couple weeks back. I was standing there listening to the speeches and found myself automatically picking my clips. I had to give my head a shake. I was not there for a story. I was there as a locked-out CBC reporter. But it's hard to break habits. It's hard to be missing big stories. As a national reporter, it's embarrassing to be walking around a CBC building when a huge story is unfolding in New Orleans and the CBC is not there. I like to tell people the biggest difference between us and the private broadcasters. It's our foreign coverage, I say. We send Canadian journalists to bring us a Canadian perspective. You won't see NBC reporters on the national, period. Except, of course, during a lockout, and that is exactly what happened. I should be there, I thought. We should be there, telling the truth about the chaos and suffering when officials don't respond fast enough. Then there are big Canadian stories we are missing while we walk this picket line, stories Canadians are missing. On Friday, a record number of students will run the Terry Fox Run to honor the marathon he began 25 years ago. CBC promised live coverage from across the country, a major television event. I was working on stories about stem cell research and other breakthroughs supported by the $360 million that has been raised in Terry's name. The Terry Fox Foundation is hoping for a record year of fundraising. CBC made commitments to his family and to the cause of cancer research, commitments that now won't be honored. And don't forget that other big story we almost missed, the death of a popular Quebec premier. Oh wait, the broadcaster that calls itself Canada's most trusted reported that, and it wasn't true. Please, let's get back to work. Our listeners and viewers deserve more. For CBC Unplugged, I'm Natalie Clancy.
Natalie Clancy is normally a CBC television news reporter.
I don't know how normal you'd call Natalie, but she is a TV news reporter. Over the past few weeks, many fantastic BC performers have shared their talent with us. So let's have a listen to another Live on the Line Picket Serenade.
I'm Tetsuro Shigematsu, and this is Little Mika, along with Lynn Barnabé. And right now we have a very, very special guest, someone I've had the pleasure of playing on the roundup many, many times.
He's originally from Guinea, and he's been playing all over Canada and beyond with his wonderful band and wonderful African dancers. Three-time Juno winner, his name is Alpha Yaya Diallo, and today he will be accompanied on bongos by Randy Rain-Rouche. Randy is a favorite, a CBC favorite for many, many years. So please welcome Alpha Yaya Diallo and Randy Rain-Rouche.
Woo! Merci.
All right, everyone. Afla Yaya Diallo, along with Randy Rain Rouge. And in case you're wondering who the guy in the middle was, that's Rafael Pedrillo.
Now, my CBC television colleague Ian Hanamansing caused something of a stir on the line here at Studio Zero this week. CBC radio reporter Lisa Johnson, no relation, was there and has this story.
Each roll, one match die. The total is added to the initial lead or gap. Challenge GM goes first, then the other. Oh, I see. That's why it's supposed to be one, two, or three, right? Because
yeah.
Now you can make up, if you roll a six and I roll a one, fine. Then we're tied. Right?
Good thing I've got the old rules.
And the other, you each have
all right,
three
so one
rolls,
and two is one, three and four is two.
What is this game? What is it called?
It's called Big League Manager, and it's a game that I developed when I was about 13 or 14 years old. My friends and I played a couple of summers, and then I forgot about it until my kids got old enough to try out Monopoly, and I said, oh, let me see if they'd be interested in this game. So I bought some poster board and some recipe cards, and they liked it. And then some of the guys I play ball hockey with, some adults, they liked it. And so a friend and I decided maybe as a hobby we'll develop it and bring it to market.
So this is a replacement to the day job.
For the lockout, it's actually soaked up a lot of extra time, and I spent the weekend rather than fretting about work and rewriting scripts for projects I was working on. I spent the weekend fretting about the game and rewriting the rules a few times. So it certainly filled that void very well.
Okay, so what are you trying to do in Big League Manager?
The object of the game is for people to build the best hockey team they can, and then when they land on a play square, they pit their team against one of their fellow general managers' teams, and the first person to win five of those matches wins the game. So, you know how hockey pools obsess so many people, especially this time of year? Well, this is kind of a board game version of a hockey pool, where you sit there and you trade and you draft, and your players become injured, or they demand a higher contract. There's free agency, there's a salary cap. So, for people who kind of pay attention to hockey on a day-to-day basis, this game soaks up a lot of those kinds of interests and desires.
Now, the salary cap, is that something you just added after you... Were you watching the negotiations to modify your game?
You are such an astute young woman. It is actually not something that existed when 30 years ago when I developed this game with my friends. And even a year ago in the test version of the game, it didn't have a salary cap. So, yes, we added that about 6 weeks ago.
Now, I'm not seeing any hockey sticks here. There's no... These men are not wearing padding that I can see.
I am. I'm wearing padding somewhere.
When they face off in a match, how do they win or lose?
It's all board game oriented, you know. It's just like at the end of Monopoly, people don't jump out of their window when they go bankrupt. Well, this too is a game where, you know, it's all about the board game. It's all, and we said here, in fact, one of the players, our CBC radio players here, said they're part of an interesting cohort of a combination of people with attention deficit disorder. All four of them have that, but also potential members of Mensa. You know,
right.
and none of whom
so
skate particularly well. So it's an interesting kind of overlap of these three groups.
Now, can we take a closer look at some of these cards? Are these familiar players?
You know, with copyright being an issue, what we did is we grabbed some guys in a beer league team and we took pictures of them on the ice. So that's who these guys are. And what we recommend people do with the game is write down names, any names they want. They could be their names, their kids' names, their ball hockey teammates' names, or, you know, superstars. And that adds kind of a dimension to it as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Ian.
Oh, thank you.
Ian Hanamansing with CBC Unplugged contributor Lisa Johnson.
Don Genova, the host of Pacific Palate, is here on the line, and he has created a special lockout feature. He's turned his goal of eating healthier and losing weight into a column he calls Picket Size Me.
Super size me.
This isn't exactly Super Size Me, but I am calling it Picket Size Me. I'm Don Genova, generally referred to around CBC Vancouver as the food guy. I'm a full-time food journalist, and I freelance 2 to 3 items a week to CBC, Pacific Palate in Vancouver, so much on my plate in Victoria, and my syndicated CBC column, Food for Thought. So I am a CMG member, and I'm out here on the picket line because I believe in everything the Guild is fighting for right now. I'm also fighting to lose weight. Being a food journalist has a built-in occupational hazard. You eat out a lot, and being on the picket line is like being able to eat out all day long. There are donuts and Timbits and chocolate muffins and chocolates and cake and cookies, all very tempting and all very laden with fat and sugar. I'm not the only one who is trying to win the Battle of the Bulge, and here are some comments from some of my fellow locked-out workers on the picket line.
Lisa Christensen, on picket line food, what have you been bringing?
Well, today I brought a salad
an avocado, a chopped up tomato, and some romaine lettuce, balsamic vinegar, and sea salt.
You're giving this some thought, aren't you?
I am. I've done the opposite thing where I just kind of picked at the donuts on the table, and it didn't work really well. Not only was I tired, I think I cried a lot, too.
Kate, what has been your experience on the food line here?
Well, first of all, I haven't had any of the sweets that are, you know, given or handed out. I came with money. So I took myself out for breakfast, huge breakfast, had, you know, bacon, eggs, toast. So the next day I thought, well, you know, the protein's good, but, oh, they've got crepes with, you know, sour cream and strawberries and raspberries and, you know, icing sugar on the top. And that was my breakfast. Oh, dear. You know, too much sugar, way too much sugar. So now I'll have protein drink in the morning and a salad for lunch.
Now, Yvonne, you've been commenting on the picket line food as well. What have you noticed since you started here?
Well, it's been great how generous everybody has been with the food that they bring down, but it tends to be a lot of sweets, high in sugar, which I'm a bit terrified of because I've been eliminating that from my diet. So I find that I've just trying to avoid buying all the food that's available in the downtown. First of all, your picket pay is pretty cheap, or not cheap, but, you know, there's only so much. You don't want to spend it all on the fast food stuff. So I've been doing a lot of prep. So I've been trying to bring protein shakes for the morning for breakfast and, you know, my nutritious muffins and, you know, another little protein hit for lunch, whatever that might be, you know, hummus or tuna salad or something like that. And then just, you know, fruit for snacks and just to sort of be smart about it and take advantage of it. I mean, you know, you can walk around the building and get some good physical exercise and eat healthy and sort of keep your spirits up that way, too.
So a month into this thing, people are starting to realize that all those goodies can be bad for you. To help us out with some better choices, Capers, a natural food store in Vancouver, sent along their nutritionist, Victoria Pulaski, with some sage advice.
Well, obviously, it's extraneous circumstances being on a picket line. But one of the best ways to kind of protect yourself for the day is starting off with some breakfast before you come for the day, because there's really good studies showing that people who eat breakfast on an average eat over the whole day at 100 to 200 calories less over the whole day. And the best way is to start with some protein, some eggs or tofu or nut butter, cheese, even some salmon, something to get your metabolism boosted for the day. Because if you've done some exercise or even if you're walking all day, if you've got protein in your system, it'll give your whole metabolic rate a kickstart.
Victoria brought along some great fruit snacks, peaches, apples, plums, and other foods designed to help you lose weight, not gain it.
All of these foods actually are low glycemic index foods, and there's good research to show that foods that have a low GI or a low glycemic index actually contribute to weight loss. So they have a lower rise in your blood sugar after eating them than other foods, and as a result, it just your whole insulin fat metabolism stays on an even keel.
So healthy snacks are obviously important. What about foods that you should avoid?
Most adults, we can't afford to be drinking a lot of calories, or we save it for things that we really want, like a good glass of wine or a latte here and there. But to be drinking a lot of juice, unless you're trying to gain weight, most of us can't handle that, those extra concentrated calories. It's great for people who are putting out a lot of energy, kids, athletes. For the rest of us, we got to watch that, drinking our calories. But the other food that really just seems to cause an increase in your glycemic index and put on weight, particularly around the middle, it has a stress response, is the white refined sugar, refined flour. So trying to limit those as much as possible when you're trying to watch your weight.
Good advice. So thanks to Victoria Pulaski, nutritionist at Capers. And so how have I been doing with my efforts? I try to walk at least 10 kilometers anytime I picket. And as well as heeding Victoria's advice, I am on week 2 of phase 1 of the South Beach diet. No pasta, bread, potatoes, rice, booze, fruit, or sugar for 2 weeks. And you know what? I've lost 6 pounds. No picket sizing me yet. I'll have more in the weeks to come. That is, if we're still walking the line. For Studio Zero, I'm Don Genova, on the line in Vancouver. Supersize me.
Hi again. Thanks for being here with the CBC Unplugged live on the line. I'm Ted Sirosugamatsu.
And I am Lynn Barnaby. So we're here with more music for you on the live on the line.
That's right. Much more music. And our next featured performer has paid his dues in Nashville and received critical acclaim for his latest efforts. Both of his King's newest CD is called All Children Believe in Heaven.
I was going to sing a Woody Guthrie song, but I thought that would be a cliche. And there's enough cliches at CBC. Just so you remember when you go back. No, it's great. I think without the CBC, we'd be America. It's true. Well, don't take it so hard. You cast out the decline. The good parts, it's only our hearts falling apart. Well, don't worry about death. Well, it comes when it comes, and it comes quickly tonight. Down on Fillmore Street, they empty your pockets by shaking your feet. Well, the rat traps are snapping, the bluebird he sings, Nelson Riddle's kissing every little string, every little string, every little string, every little string. One by one, by one, by one, and not everyone believes in miracles, so count yourself amongst the lucky few. We're not scared, but we must sleep eventually. Where sweet dreams, little Stella Bella Blue, little Stella Bella Blue. Angels are singing, Sweet Jane, and all of the stars packing it in, drinking it up, calling it quits, averaging hits, and building a lifetime of broken little bits. And the rat traps are snapping, the bluebird sings, Nelson Riddle's kissing every little string, 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 every little string. One by one, by one, by one, not everyone believes in miracles, so count yourself amongst a lucky few. We're all scared, but we must sleep eventually. Ah, sweet dreams, little Stella Bella Blue, little Stella Bella Blue. Good luck with your lockout. Don't do crack, it's a ghetto drug. Just joking.
Pussy First King, thank you.
The big issue in this lockout is a fight over permanent jobs. Some claim that younger workers don't expect or even want permanent jobs, so Lisa Johnson, one of our locked out radio reporters, decided to check out that claim. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Paul.
What is this about young people not wanting a permanent job? Yay or nay?
Well, it's something I hear all the time. It's come up in this lockout over and over in newspaper editorials. They talk about studies showing that young people aren't interested in a permanent job or a job for life. Now, I did some digging, found one of those stories. It's actually one of those studies, from Leeds University in the UK, based on interviews of pretty young people, 17 to 19 year olds, and found that most of the people they talked to don't believe that jobs for life exist anymore.
So does that mean young people have given up on jobs for life?
Well, sort of. I mean, at CBC, most of the younger people, and I'm one of them, they're working day to day on short-term contracts, and they do want more job security. They want benefits, and they want a staff job. But I thought, you know, maybe we're unusual here. So I went out to UBC, and I talked to some other young people about what they want and what they expect from a job. And there's no doubt that 20-somethings see the job market changing. And here's how an educational student named Trevor Burton has summed it up.
It's been drummed into us since high school that we're not going to have the same job, you know, throughout. Job security is just not there anymore. So you kind of get used to the idea. And also for the fact that everybody's had those crappy jobs where you get bored of it in about a year or two and you want to move on. And but then again, though, it's been something that's been said to us since we're in high school. You will not have a job for 40 years anymore. That's just not going to happen.
Now, what he describes is definitely true from my own experience. I'm one of the younger reporters here at CBC. I went to high school in the 1990s, and I lived in a one-industry town, and it seemed like everyone's parents, including my own dad, who's a scientist, was getting downsized and was getting contracted out. So I learned the same thing as that student mentioned, that job security is hard to come by.
So how has that changed what you or other young people want from a job? What are you looking for now?
Well, it's funny. I think that my generation, in a way, we want more than our parents ever had in terms of travel and excitement and fulfillment, and yet we expect less in terms of what a company might give us because we've had this drummed into us. So I asked UBC students, and I said, what do you want from a job? And here's what they had to say.
Something that's dynamic, something that's a bit more exciting than your typical job, be a bit more independent.
Some flexibility to do my own work, I guess, and I don't know, decent pay, good environment, yeah. And something that's not the same thing every day.
I want to traveling while I'm working type deal.
I really want to be on the cutting edge of things, like on the side of more inventing rather than stabilizing.
More important what I'd be working in than just job security. I'd rather an exciting job where I could possibly lose it than a boring job that's stable.
Okay, what did they say about job security?
Well, there's a big difference between a 40-year job for life and being able to build your life contract to contract. And the students I talked to said, sure, they expect to change jobs, but they still want benefits and enough security to, say, buy a house and raise kids. I asked these students what they thought of this claim we keep hearing that young people don't want permanent jobs, and here's what they said.
No, I think that's quite false, actually. I think most people here are going to school for that very reason, to find a good permanent job.
I think there's a difference between having a permanent job and having a job that keeps you safe and healthy and able to pay your rent.
Why did I come to university? So I can actually get a job. Some sort of stability, at least, job enjoyment. That's probably the most important. But
no, that's why I went to university, is because I need like a more solid job, right? Like I want that yearly income. I don't want to have to worry about where the next paycheck is coming from. I need the benefits because my parents have them and get kind of used to them. It doesn't seem very fair to say, oh, you don't want a permanent job, so I'm not giving you anything for it. We can treat you crappy because you don't want this job forever. Whoever told you that is crazy. If I wanted that, I would have stayed in construction.
Now, Lisa, you've worked as a casual and on contract for CBC. What's that like?
Well, I count myself lucky because I love my work and I get paid to talk to interesting people. The subject matter changes all the time. So I have that exciting, you know, fulfillment part that those young people were talking about. But it can be stressful not knowing how much work you're going to get next month. I mean, there's so many people working here who are casuals. They do it for years. It's like substitute teaching. You get scheduled day to day. So there's lots of work in the summer and at Christmas. But each September and every January, the work dries up. Now, right now I have a bit more security. I'm on a temporary contract. So I get some benefits and I have full-time work, I mean, besides the lockout. But even that can make it hard to plan your life. I'll give you an example. Last year, I started my first temporary contract with CBC. I was going to be working in Nelson, so I decided to buy a car. And I wanted a slightly better one than I could afford, so I went to the bank and asked for a loan. And I'm feeling like a pretty good risk. You know, I just finished grad school. I don't have any debt, and I have a 5-month contract with the CBC. But the bank wasn't so sure. They say, 5 months, what do you have coming up next? I mean, what are you going to be doing in January? And I was a little embarrassed. I was trying to explain that 5 months is nothing to sneeze at the CBC, and that I thought I'd be getting more work after that, but just because I had faith in it didn't mean that the loan officer would. So this claim that young people don't care about permanent jobs, I don't think so. I mean, we know that they're harder to come by, but job security and benefits, it's still something that I want.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Lisa Johnson is a locked out CBC reporter.
almost 35 years, Jim Kearney has been contributing sports columns to CBC Radio. So he wasn't about to let a little thing like a lockout stop him. Jim?
I guess the most intriguing mystery this coming season surrounds Wayne Gretzky. The great one, whose accomplishments as a player are the stuff of legends, is to make his coaching debut with the Phoenix Coyotes. They're a team hitherto so far removed from legendary status as to be invisible. Will he bring them up over the horizon and turn them into an NHL power? Well, only if he commands a collection of the league's finest players, backed up by superior goaltending. From this distance, he appears to have neither. As an inspirational force, how much is that worth? In the short run, like the Olympics or the World Championship, possibly. Over an 82-game schedule, don't bet on it. Most superstar players have avoided coaching careers. In recent memory, most notably Gordie Howe and Bobby Orr. Early in their life, the Vancouver Canucks hired one, Bill Cowley. They were a minor league team then, and Cowley was a just-retired superstar playmaker who had helped Boston Bruins to two Stanley Cups. It was said of him he made more wings than Boeing. Five-time All-Star, still a Boston legend. But as a coach, a self-admitted bust. Everything he did as a player came naturally, he said. I don't know how to teach, and I'm never going to coach again. That was 1949, and he was as good as his word. He went to his grave having never coached another hockey game. And it's instructive to know that the best coaching record in hockey is held by Scotty Bowman, who never played beyond junior, that the last Toronto Cup dynasty in the 1960s was coached by Punch Imlach, a one-time senior amateur player, that Al Arbour, a fringe NHLer, coached New York Islanders to four straight cups, and that Glenn Sather, a journeyman NHL forward, coached the Edmonton dynasty of the 1980s. Of course, he had Gretzky leading the way. And that's a luxury Wayne won't have in Phoenix. For CBC Unplugged, this is Jim Kearney.
You know that voice. That's the bard of Bowen Island, Jim Kearney. Time now for another Picket Line Serenade.
So we're back here at the Picket Performance Stage for CBC Unplugged. I'm Lynn Barnaby.
And I'm Tetsuro Shigematsu. Time for some more music. Now this man to my right, or to my left in fact, how did you do that? He's also a magician in addition to being a musician. Ralph Shaw has been entertaining Vancouver for some time now, but you may know him by another name, another title in fact.
So CBC Unplugged is proud to present the king of the ukulele.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wow, a lot of guitars here today. It's like the 1960s all over again.
You rock, Ralph.
Thank you, Ed. I'm going to take you back to the 1930s. I've got a CD coming out soon as well, and I'm doing a tribute CD of all George Formby songs. And George Formby was a famous entertainer, and his stomping ground was a town called Blackpool. Have you heard of Blackpool? Blackpool, it's in England. It's England's Coney Island. There's roller coasters and amusements of all kinds. You even have a big tower, Blackpool Tower. It's like the Eiffel Tower. And you can get a kind of candy. And it's called Blackpool Rock. I'll have to describe it because it's what the song's all about. Blackpool Rock is about 10, 12 inches long. It's pink and it's very hard. That's why it's called rock. And as you can probably imagine, it's full of possibilities of double entendres for British people. Every year when summer comes round, off to the sea I go. I don't care if I do spend a pound, I'm rather rash, I know. See me dressed like all the sports, in my blazer and a pair of shorts, with me little stick of Blackpool rock. Along the promenade I stroll. It may be sticky, but I never complain. It's nice to have a nibble at it now and again. Every day, wherever I stray, the kids all round me flock.
One afternoon, the band conductor up on his stand somehow lost his bat and it flew out of his hand. So I jumped in his place and then conducted the band with my little stick of Blackpool Rock. Yes, sir, with my little stick of Blackpool Rock. Along the promenade I strolled. In my pocket it got stuck, I could tell, 'cause when I pulled it out, I pulled my shirt out as well. Every day, wherever I stray, the kids all round me flock. A girl while bathing clung to me, I shouted out, oh. She said, I think I'm drowning and you'll save me, I know. I said, well, if you're drowning, would you mind letting go of me little stick of Blackpool Rock? Oh, with me little stick of Blackpool Rock. Along the promenade I stroll. In the ballroom I went dancing each night. No wonder every girl I dance with stuck to me tight. Oh, every day, wherever I stray, the kids all round me flock. A fella took me photograph, it cost 1 and 3. I said, when it was done, is that supposed to be me? Ooh, you properly mucked it up. The only thing I could see is me little stick of Blackpool Rock.
I think it's fair to say that many of us have found being without a paycheck is a humbling experience. But as CBC Unplugged's Stephanie Mitchell learned, there are many ways to stretch your money.
Now, Luigi, can you tell me what you're doing to save money while you're on the line?
I'm eating a lot of rice and beans, yo.
I'm trying to cut down on lattes.
I am getting my girlfriend to pay for all my expenses.
Mom's cooking. A lot of mom's cooking. Loving it.
Well, it's hard to save money, but I'm making my own coffee, bagging my lunch, and not buying anything other than diapers.
The dirty secret of my life is that, generally speaking, I have not returned bottles and cans. I put them out in the alley for the people who come and take them. And the other day, for the first time, I took a big pile of bottles and cans to the recycling depot, and I got $8.55 for it.
We don't spend, that's all. What can we do?
I'm looking at the gas prices at the pump to see when I'm going to fill up right now.
Well, for one thing, I take the bus instead of taking my car. And I sort of think twice before I spend money where I would normally spend it.
To save money while I'm on the picket line, I'm bringing my own lunch. I'm taking public transportation. I'm being more frugal in the grocery store.
No credit cards, no long distance. And I'm not going into stores.
Well, having been through this a number of times, I found it's important not to necessarily have to change your whole lifestyle, just to like stop everything.
Caring what food I need to eat, doing all my food at home, cutting back on the food and beverage expense that I can.
Well, I made some reserve. I bought some legumes and beans and peanut butter so I can have that to eat for a long time, and I try to not spend too much.
Well, I started a t-shirt business and I'm doing about 18 cents a t-shirt, and I've done 12, so it gives me about $2.30 something. So I'm getting there.
All I'm doing right now is buying groceries, gas for my car, paying my mortgage and paying my bills, and that's it. I can't, like, and I'll buy the odd coffee here and there.
Maybe drink more, less beer. First.
I have stopped living. I don't go anywhere, and I try not to buy anything. And I sit alone in my apartment and stew.
I've given up eating food, and I have my child out picking up cans.
I'm Vancouver City Councillor Jim Green. You're listening to CBC Unplugged.
This is Paolo Pietropaolo, a locked-out radio producer for Radio Music and Arts and Entertainment. And, of course, one of the things that we usually do at Radio Music and Arts and Entertainment is we have a strong relationship with musicians and artists. And I'm at the Fringe Festival with Kirsten Schrader, the executive director of the Fringe. Hi, Kirsten.
Hello, Paolo.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's Monday night and things have slowed down a little bit, so I can breathe now.
Has it been a great start to the Fringe?
Yeah, it's been really great. It's very busy the first weekend. We have all of our activities, all the shows, of course, but also daytime activities like Kids Fringe, graffiti art pits. So the first weekend's just definitely rocking around here.
I was here on Saturday night, and I can attest to that. It was rocking.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could say a word about how CBC and the Fringe, I mean, CBC is a sponsor of the Fringe, and if how that has affected maybe this year's festival with the lockout.
Well, it's a huge loss for us, specifically because the CBC does a lot of sponsorship with us. They do interviews with the performers. They run two-minute show clips with every group, anything that's radiophonic, as well as interviews with me and talk. CBC always talks about some of our events, and so we have none of that this year, and it's a huge loss to the festival.
Yeah. Well, of course, we wish we were back on the air so that we could promote, but since I'm here, maybe we could take the chance to say a word or two about what's on at the Fringe this weekend or things to look out for and maybe help get the word out to some people who might want to come down to Granville Island.
That would be great, yeah. We have the rest of the week for the Fringe. It goes until Sunday, September 18th. Next weekend is our Kids Fringe, our last weekend of Kids Fringe. So for everyone out there who has kids, we have a free outdoor performance stage. Everyone on stage is a kid performing for another kid. So we've got child singers, cello players, string quartet, dancers, all kinds of stuff like that. So it's great. And then, of course, every late afternoon and evening until the wee hours of the morning is a Fringe show. So you can check out our website, which is www.vancouverfringe.com. For more schedule details or go to your local 7-Eleven for a program guide.
Fabulous.
Thanks. Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I wanted to talk about the Georgia Strait Presents the Pick of the Fringe because the CBC radio usually does a lot of stuff for us about the Pick of the Fringe. It's our holdover series that runs September 22nd to the 25th. Some of the hottest shows at this year's Fringe, it's a secret right now. I can't tell you who is going to be there, but there are some fabulous shows and you don't want to miss them, honestly. They're really, really good. Our talent this year is astounding.
And all that is at vancouverfringe.com?
It will be announced. The pick will be announced on September 15th.
Grand. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Paolo.
Coverage of the local arts and culture scene is a big part of what CBC normally delivers. And CBC music producer Michael Juck decided this tale couldn't quite wait for the lockout to end.
My name is Michael Juck, and I'm pissed off about this management lockout at the CBC. It's not just because I'm sitting here in the front seat of my car voice tracking an item for Studio Zero. No, it's because I would ordinarily be working inside the CBC producing a show called West Coast Performance. In a normal season, hundreds of local musicians get a chance to perform on the radio for West Coast Performance. They get exposure, experience, a little bit of prestige, and they get a paycheck from CBC Radio, which, if you're a typical struggling artist, is a whole lot better than waiting around for the phone to ring. Now, one such musician who got caught in the crossfire between CBC management and its employees is the young and extremely talented pianist, Avon Yu. Now, we should have recorded Avon's concert at the Clark Theater in Mission a couple of weeks ago. I was told it was a very good one. You see, Avon is on his way to Poland to compete in the Frédéric Chopin International Piano Competition next month, and we wanted to send him off in style, but no such luck. I think I can at least partially make it up to Avon, though. A couple of days ago, I put down my CMG placard and picked up a microphone and headed out to catch up with Avon Yu and his teachers preparing for the big competition. From Studio Zero, here's a little story you're not going to hear anywhere else. We'll start with the voice of Ralph Markham.
Avon is remarkable because, first of all, at his young age, he is so completely dedicated to what he's doing. I mean, completely motivated. We can be working on a piece for 2 or 3 hours and there's never any sign of fatigue or let up or not wanting to understand and do what we're trying to ask him to do. He'll be just as wide-eyed after 3 hours he is at the beginning, and which is amazing.
My name is Avon Yu. I think the fact that my playing can touch the audience is what is special. At least that's what I have been hearing from the audience, the feedback that I got, and is that they get emotionally involved, as I do with the music.
My name is Kenneth Broadway, and I am Avan Yu's teacher. He knows that this is what he wants to do. He has a single-mindedness of purpose, which is so important in anyone who's trying to make a solo career, not just in music, but as an athlete or just about anything. If you want to be the best in the world, you have to devote the maximum of your energies to that. And he's lucky that he's learned that this is what he wants to do at a very young age. We are working very hard for this, much harder than if we weren't going to Warsaw.
Actually, I don't like competitions, I have to say. But competitions have almost been necessary in order to have young people, especially young people, to be heard.
Avan arrived this morning, for example, at 10 a.m., and what are we now, 4 o'clock in the afternoon? We broke for lunch, but we haven't stopped, and I don't think we're going to stop for quite a while today. And so, you know, all of us are really putting our energies into this, and he's progressing incredibly quickly. It's just really very exciting. The most important thing, if you're going to get up and perform, is to actually have as much performing experience as possible. You have to practice performing. This is not only from an endurance standpoint and the standpoint of being able to hold your white heat concentration for an entire recital, but there's something about performing before an audience that just simply, I don't know, it causes you to grow. You can have epiphanies in the middle of a performance where suddenly you realize, ah, that's what this music is about. And it has to do also with the presence of the audience, the energy of the audience that you feed on, and the fact that every cell in your whole being is just giving everything to do your best. And so very often in a performance, you rise an entire level. And if you can do that a dozen times, well, you're way ahead of the game.
Go out on a limb for just a moment and tell me how you think Avan might do in Warsaw.
That's too difficult to say. Avan is extremely gifted and an extraordinary young pianist. There are many great young pianists out there today from all over the world. Avan's incredible musical understanding of this music and sensitivity does set him apart. Whether he can get through a preliminary round of 350 kids and the judges be able to discern between all of that, that's another question.
What do you think your largest obstacle might be competing in Warsaw at the Chopin competition?
It could be the fact that I'm not Polish, because obviously Chopin is just 100% connected to Poland. And there are many people who believe that you have to be Polish in order to play his Mazurkas, in order to play his Polonaise as well. But in my opinion, I think that it is not necessary. So that would be my biggest obstacle, is to win the mind of these Polish audience, that I could play these Polish music as well as any other people.
Will the Polish judges send Avan to the winner's podium? Will the CBC managers in Toronto show us a little bit of love? I don't know. Suppose anything's possible. I'll promise to keep you posted on Avan's progress, whether it's via this podcast or from the Venerable Mother Corp. Either way, good luck, Avan. I'm Michael Juck, locked out in Lotus Land.
We have really received some amazing support from BC's arts and cultural community. And so we thought it would be good to send back some of that karma that's been sent our way. And next week, we'll be putting on a fundraiser for the Performing Arts Lodge. We'll tell you more about that in a moment. But first, Paul Grant took a tour, and here now is his story.
I'm at the corner of Cardero and West Georgia in Vancouver, near the entrance to Stanley Park, right by the Bayshore Inn. The 8-story building you see going up here will be home to the Performing Arts Lodge, or PAL. PAL is a not-for-profit society. It was created to provide affordable housing for seniors in the arts. Many of them are earning less than $10,000 a year. That's half the average income for seniors in BC. When it opens early next year, the Performing Arts Lodge will have more than 100 suites, as well as a studio theater and rehearsal space. With me today are three people closely involved with this project. Jane Heyman is one of the co-founders of PAL Vancouver. Writer and director Terrence Kelly is on the PAL board of directors, and John Vance is with Access Building Association. They're the advisors to the PAL project. Terrence, let me ask you, who is going to live here?
The people who are going to live here are the performers or designers or technicians or whatever form of endeavor they've taken part in the performing arts. At the end of their career, they're going to need a place to live. Most people in our business wind up with not a lot in the kitty at the end of their lives and not a lot of work around. In our business, your friends are the people you work with. And when you're not working much anymore, you don't see your friends either. And you've left your family behind years ago. So it's a lot of lonely people in a lot of little tiny suites wondering what the hell they're going to do. And this is going to fill that need.
John, 99 suites, one-bedroom suites, and 12 life lease units. What are life lease units and who's going to live there?
Well, life lease units are suites that are being provided to performing artists. There are 12 of them. They all have waterfront views. They're two-bedroom units. And they're really targeted to people who have done a little bit better in the performing arts. And that money is going to generate the equity that's necessary for the financing of the project. It's a $16 million project. The money that performers are bringing to the table themselves, just in life lease sales alone, is $3.25 million. A lot of this project is due to the city of Vancouver. It's their enlightened policies on housing that have allowed this development to proceed in the first place. The city has contributed, in terms of land, something on the order of $4 to $5 million. And they're providing that to PAL for $1. That's a heck of a bargain.
So, Jane, when is this place going to open? When are people going to be moving in?
People are going to be starting to move in the middle of February. If we're lucky, February the 14th, which I think is a perfectly wonderful date to start. It'll take a while for people to move in. I mean, there's 111 suites, so they won't all move in at once. But I'm hoping that we will have our grand opening, a very theatrical event, by the early summer.
Thanks, you guys. For Studio Zero, I'm Paul Grant, sidewalk superintendent at the Performing Arts Lodge at the corner of Georgia and Cardiero in Vancouver.
And I'm Karen Burgess here at Studio Zero. Now that you have heard about the Performing Arts Lodge and the good work that's being done there, I wanted to tell you about the fundraiser that CBC Unplugged is holding to give those folks at PAL a helping hand. It all started out when we asked the arts community for a little bit of help when we had the idea for these podcasts. We got an amazing response from local musicians. They came out to play for us on the picket lines, and you've heard some of their performances throughout the show today. But we decided, why not make this a public event and maybe try to give a little bit back to the performers who've been so good to us since the lockout began? So, we're taking over the Media Club here in downtown Vancouver on Friday the 23rd between 6 and 9 p.m. We have a fabulous lineup of musicians. Rich Hope and his Evildoers, Ox, the Paperboys, and Young and Sexy. The whole night will be hosted by Rick and Paul, along with Cheryl McKay, Priya Ramu, Margaret Gallagher, Grant Lawrence, and a host of other CBC personalities that you have been missing since this lockout started. And of course, all the proceeds from the door go straight to the Performing Arts Lodge. So this is your official invitation. I hope to see you there at the Media Club. It's an early show, so come by after work. The doors open at 6 on Friday the 23rd, and you can get more information at cbcunplugged.com.
Well, it's time now to say so long from Studio Zero on the picket line, broadcast home of the CBC Unplugged here in Vancouver.
Thanks to all of the generous musicians and supporters who helped us make it through another week of CBC Lockout 2005.
And you don't have to wait till the next CBC Unplugged to hear from us. In Vancouver, tune in to 88.3 or drop by your local CBC picket line and show your support. Or better still, you can write your MP and demand some action.
This edition of CBC Unplugged is dedicated to our friend and colleague, CBC Radio 3 host Alexis Mazarin. Get well soon, buddy. We're pulling for you. For CBC Unplugged, I'm Erica Johnson.
For CBC Unplugged, I'm Rick Clough.